Welcome to the Sailor Noob Podcast, where a super fan and a noob talk about the original Sailor Moon episode by episode. I'm your host, Mikan Hana, joined by my co-host.
I'm the co-host, Caliban the Noob, and what a weird, strange project we've embarked on.
And we're a couple of magical people ready to moon crystal power make up this episode. Sailor Noob is brought to you by a lonely little kid who just misses her parents, her home, and her
and
poo.
Dry pants. And poo. What?
And her. You stepped on my joke! And her poo!
Yeah, well, I was talking about wet pants, and you're talking about poo, so I think the jokes go together, really.
Yeah, all right.
You know, whenever I sit down, I have to... All right, so look, was it that good of a joke? It's a weird project, mostly because we talk about poo and urine, but also because we just set out to do this, to, like, talk about this show, an old cartoon show, but yet still, you know, kept secret in people's hearts. People feel warmly about this thing.
Very warmly,
and then, you know, we embarked on this thing. It's going to take years to complete. And, you know, I'm not somebody who, I mean, sure, I watch new things. I watch things that I'm not familiar with. But when I watch something that I really like, I have to really engage with it. And I'm in the situation where I'm in a glass case of emotion. Like, I can't look anything up. I can't do... I have questions. There'll be no answers. They will all come in time. It's like my the next 4 years of my life is like one long advent calendar, you know? And it's like, what's in the next one? And, oh boy, I hope the one on the 28th is great. And then you open it up and you don't know what it is. And it's...
Right, right. Is it going to be... I don't know, like dark chocolate covered caramel.
Oh, you're just assuming it's all candy.
Yeah, or
sometimes
is it
like just
be...
spiders come out. It's just it's just spiders.
Okay, I was trying to pick like white chocolate. I don't know.
That's
like,
white chocolate and spiders about equivalent.
I'd say spiders are worse, especially if you feel like
white chocolate covered spiders.
Ooh, better.
That's the worst.
Yes. Yeah. Today we are talking about episode number 68, Chibiusa o Mamore, Ju Senshi no Daikisen in Japanese, Protect Chibiusa, Clash of the Ten Warriors, the English translation, and the English title, Naughty and Nice.
Now that I have watched this nice episode, I know how naughty that title is.
Yeah.
Do they just have a box? Like, they have a shoebox full of, like, nah, bad ideas. And then when they get stuck, get the shoebox.
They must.
It has nothing to do with anything. They didn't even pun something. Wait for mine. It's going to be a pun, a play on words.
Well, they're just talking about the two sides, right? But, yeah.
Right, but, like, naughty undersells the bad guys and nice... kind of undersells the good guys.
I agree. It's not a good title.
Or is it Chibiusa that's naughty? And Pooh that's nice. There, you got your poo back.
Thank you for giving me my poo back.
Sorry for taking your poo.
Yeah. Please don't take my poo next time. Would you like to give us a synopsis of this episode?
Yes, William Shatner. I would. We open on a chapel, I'll stop, where the bridal chorus is, you know, the bridal chorus, right? Richard Wagner's.
Yes.
Here comes the bride.
Yes,
it's called the bridal chorus. It's from Lohengrin. Anyway.
I heard you humming that earlier. That's why.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that and, you know, I'm just thinking about my nuptials. And it's playing, and we're in a church, in a chapel, and above the apse. That's the front part of a church where the altar is.
You're showing your church knowledge.
You've got an apse, a transept, and a nave. What? Is a stained glass window featuring a rabbit, which you don't often see.
Yep. Nope.
That's maybe at a Unitarian church. It'd be you know, on Easter, they'd have a rabbit.
Sure.
Stained glass window. Nothing against Unitarians. Good people. We also see the happy couple, and they sure look like Usagi and Mamoru, which is confirmed for us when Usagi says, "Mama, we're finally together." Bottles are popping, champagne is flying, and Usagi thinks, "It's cold." We cut to Usagi in bed, waking up from a dream of getting married. But that cold feeling is still present. She looks at her sheets, and her bed is filled with pee!
I know.
She cries out, waking Luna. And Luna's like, what? Don't tell me you wet the bed. You're in eighth grade, and you wet your bed? And this whole time, it keeps cutting between Usagi and Luna, and the amount of sweat on both of their faces is an ocean compared to the pee in this bed. And
so
Luna,
true.
I think, is freaked out, but maybe a little jazzed as well. She says, like, it's unbelievable, but she sounds kind of pleased. Like, in her mind, she finally has the high ground for any future argument. I'm just saying.
Oh, you think?
That's the impression I got.
Oh, my gosh.
But just as everybody is about to drown in their own sweat, the covers move. And Usagi pulls them away to see that Chibiusa is sleeping there. And it was her that wet the bed. And Usagi, she is not happy.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in the Rainbow Room, we see the return of Creepy Wise Guy, who appears as a hologram to Rebaeus. Creepy says, when the sun rises and dawn approaches in a town called Juban, specific,
yeah.
Energy will appear in the sky near a pedestrian bridge. It's really specific.
It's very specific.
By the blockbuster on 23rd and Fuji. Yeah. Rubeus says, I'll have the sisters watch that area. By the way, how are things on your end? And we see a vision of Crystal Tokyo under orange lightning-filled skies, and hundreds of UFOs are descending on it. Mm-hmm. But Creepy says that a powerful energy is being fired from the crystal points, protecting the city. And we switch to a large, almost church-like chamber itself, where four women in Fuku are standing around a giant glowing crystal.
Yes.
Rubeus is thoughtful and he says, our plans are always being thwarted by sailor soldiers, even here and now. And Creepy says, you have to find the silver crystal and shatter it. And he disappears. Rubeus calls the Ayakashi sisters to him to give them orders. The next day, Usagi is beating out her sheets outside. And Shingo is enjoying the situation. He says, oh, real nice. Wetting your bed when you're in eighth grade? Come on! Oh, no. Don't try to blame it on Chibiusa, stupid Usagi. Usagi does not start beating Shingo with her rug beater, but she does see Chibiusa leaving the house with Luna P. Chibi turns to look at her, and the two of them stare at each other for a while. It's not like the length of the Evangelion elevator ride with Rei and Asuka, but it's like it's a protracted silence. And then Chibi turns and runs off. And Usagi's like, where are you going? Later, Usagi is talking to Luna, who says, Chibi probably feels lonely. That's why she climbed into your bed. And you were so harsh on her for wetting the bed. Okay, Luna, sure.
I know.
Luna says, go find her and apologize. But Usagi says, well, I was going to go shopping with the girls today. And Luna's like, get out there and do it. We don't know when she'll release her energy again. We'll split up and find her. In town, Chibi is sitting all alone on some steps and thinks to herself, so what? I'm a kid. I'm going to wet the bed now and then. But she doesn't seem happy.
No.
She has a thoughtful reverie about another time where she's in an elegant room. She's in a four-poster bed, crying. She's wet the bed again. Or before. Yeah. And her mother comes to comfort her. She's wearing an elegant dress with wings, and she comforts her. Chibi thinks, Mama and Papa, I want to come home. And she looks at the key around her neck, and she thinks, I want to go home! And she holds the key aloft, and it glows and shoots a pink energy ball that creates a swirling portal above her. She's drawn halfway up towards it until it disappears, and she's dropped back down to the ground, wondering why it didn't work. She begins to cry, and again, a huge pillar of energy blasts from her into the sky. Just then, who should show up at the bottom of these stairs to a pedestrian bridge? But Berthier, who says, oh no, are you sad, little rabbit? Chibi tries to run up the stairs, but at the top is Koan, who says, I found her first.
Yeah.
Clearly you didn't, says Berthier. But they both agree that whoever kills the rabbit first is the winner. Chibi's in trouble, but as Berthier breasts boobily up the stairs, Luna P rolls under her foot, and she slips and asses backwardly down the stairs.
Yes.
Chibi quickly runs right over her down the stairs, but Koan sails over the both of them to block her way at the bottom. Luna P flies at her face, but Koan knocks Luna P away to the ground. But how about a cat with actual limbs? Luna D Cat flies over Chibi's head and into Koan's face, sending Koan sprawling to the ground. Berthier comes over to gloat, but Luna P slams into the back of her head as he, or it, and Chibi make their escape.
Yes.
Regular Luna gets knocked hard into a chain link fence as the two youngest Ayakashi sisters fix their makeup and get ready to fix the rabbit for good. Across town are Mina, Mako, Rei, and Ami waiting for Usagi to arrive for their shopping trip, and they're getting impatient. But Artemis spots a badly hurt Luna stumbling up. Luna tells them Chibiusa is in trouble. She's somewhere around the pedestrian bridge. The girls take off to find Chibi, and Artemis gets to work licking Luna's wounds, which saves a ton on vet bills. Oh, man. Usagi is just running around looking for Chibi, and she sees her sneaking into a construction site. She follows her in and hides behind a fence as she sees Chibi tearfully push the nose of Luna P and begin talking to Pooh. Pooh tells Chibi to be strong. She has powerful allies. Chibi's like, I don't know anybody like that. I've just got stupid Usagi and her lanky friends. Pooh says, what about the Sailor Senshi? And the pronouns get a little vague here, but Chibi seems to be saying in reply that the Ayakashi are stronger. Look what they did to my mom. Yeah. Even dad couldn't beat them. Pooh says, remember when you were very young? And we don't have time for this. No, remember when you were very young? Don't you remember the Senshi that looked after you in the future city? And we see like this tableau of little Chibi, Chibiusa, with sailors Mercury, Rei, Jupiter, and Venus outside of Crystal Tokyo. Mm-hmm. Pooh says, they're fighting to defend Crystal Tokyo and the Tokyo in your time. And she signs off.
Yeah. Pooh out.
Goddamn Comcast customer service. Usagi thinks, whoa, what happened to this kid's mom?
Yeah.
But just then, a voice cries out, I found you, rabbit. And Cohen appears. Usagi, very quietly, transforms where she's hiding, I guess.
I know. I guess that's the only reason why she was hiding.
Power makeup. Cohen says, die. But Sailor Moon appears and says, evil one, picking on a little girl who came from the future city all by herself. In the name of the moon, I'll punish you. Cohen says, sisters. And all four Ayakashi sisters appear and introduce themselves. They say, we are, they all say it like in sequence too. Like they all, they've rehearsed this.
Yeah. Right.
So it's like one sentence, but they all get like three words out of a sentence. They say, we are from the 10th planet. The Dark Moon, the Black Moon, the Ayakashi Sisters. Usagi grips Chibiusa. It's about as bad as it can be. Until suddenly, on your left, here comes the Sailor Senshi.
I know.
Strolling into the construction site, and they introduce themselves. Is this a union job? Is this work site?
No! Why are they fighting in here? I was construction workers.
I was thinking, so nothing can break. And also, especially in Japan, they cover the sites. You know, they put those tarps on the scaffolding and fences. So you nobody sees what's happening. And they'll hear explosions later, but it's a secret war, kind of, a little bit. Two groups of four warriors, totaling eight warriors, stare each other down. Mm-hmm. And cue the music! It's on!
Yes.
Each sailor faces down their dark counterparts. Powers are flying. They blew the entire animation budget on this. Mm-hmm. It's a full-on anime smackdown!
Yes.
Yes! It has to be like this! And we get a song. A Guardian of Love plays as the fight happens. And the lyrics start, my hair bursts a fire into the sky. My body is like a flame. So it's like Dragon Ball Z! We get a little Dragon Ball Z for a treat. Sailor Moon looks on as she guards Chibi, but she suddenly is hit by little flashy balls and an explosion. As Rubeus arrives to tip the balance of power, he says, I'm Crimson Rubeus, and we're here to change the future of this city. That girl must die! And he shoots more flashy balls. Usagi tries to avoid them, but she gets her ass blown up again, barely protecting Chibi. Usagi's down, she's on Dream Street, and she thinks, as Chibi cries over her, she's precocious, she's a prankster, she's a horrid kid sometimes, but before she can finish that thought, Rubeus stands over her to finish the kill. His hand starts to glow, but Sailor Moon pulls herself to her feet, saying, I will not die so easily. I'll protect this girl. And at that, a red rose embeds itself into the ground between them. Atop a crane, for maximum style points, Tuxedo Mask proclaims, I won't tolerate anybody who threatens a young girl's life. A 10th warrior appears.
Yes.
Rubeus throws flashy balls at TM, but he fires back with a hail of roses that explodes the balls in midair. TM tells Sailor Moon, now! And Sailor Moon fires off an MPH, which Rubeus barely dodges, I guess. It's still totally unclear if this does anything to them, but he gets out of the way, essentially. He calls for the Ayakashi to retreat, and our heroes are left alone on the construction site. Usagi asks Chibi, "Tell us the truth. You came from the future, right? What is the 10th planet? What is the Black Moon Clan? Your mom was captured by them?" Usagi's a pro at establishing exposition by asking questions. Chibi looks terrified. She throws herself into Sailor Moon's arms, saying, "Please save my mom." We pan up from Tokyo, and we see a strange place under a starry sky. Weird green buildings dot the metallic landscape. We see an image of creepy wise guy's hands. Not a holographic image. This is the real thing. He's there.
Yeah.
And he says, "Even a beautiful flower in bloom will die over time. As proud as they are, even Crystal Tokyo and the rabbit's mother will soon dot, dot, dot." He says dot, dot, dot out loud. And he looks up to an image of what is unquestionably Usagi in a jeweled crown, wearing a winged dress, her hands clasped in a prayer-like gesture.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yes.
They did it again! Usagi, you did it again! You a genius!
Did what again?
I complained last episode about what is this show doing? We need to get back to it. And every time I do, I swear I don't look ahead. I swear I don't like, I really want to complain that they're not doing enough. It's totally organic. They push you, they pull you, they grab you, they push you away, they bring you back.
Just when you think you're out, you're back in again.
Yes, they Godfather, they Godfather 3 you.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it was a perfect time last week. Again, maybe we should plan it out a little better than we do, but sometimes we just kind of kick things around. But last week we were like, let's do another thing where, you know, I talk about like the future or whatever. And it was like, if we had done it this week, it would have been worthless.
Yes. Because
many things are revealed this week.
That is true. That is true. So tell me, what are some of your questions, other things that you're feeling or you're unsure about or...
Well, how could why would I have any questions? They answered them all.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't have questions so much as like I want to discuss the revelations.
Okay.
So we've kind of danced around the idea that the Ayakashi sisters, you know, whoever they are, wherever they come from, are like dark sailors, evil leapers.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Quantum Leap fan. Which is unlikely.
Aww.
So, like of course, there's another moon. They're from the Black Moon.
Yes.
Which is like, okay, yeah, you guys love that monism duality type thing, right? Mm-hmm. So, and which they seem to equate with the 10th planet.
Yeah.
Which I guess would just be the 9th planet.
Oh.
Suck it, Pluto. But...
Poor Pluto.
But yeah, that's kind of cool. That's an alien kind of idea.
You know,
people don't even maybe know anymore since the demotion of Pluto. But like for years, you know, people thought there was this 1, 2, 3, like real quick in 100 years or so discovering of these outer
relatively
planets.
Quick.
And so people were like, where's the 10th planet? We're definitely going to find a 10th planet.
Sure.
And some astronomers, you know, have theorized that the motion of the planets definitely suggests that there is some other... Pluto doesn't go the way that it's supposed to.
Sure.
There's got to be some other planet out there.
Sure.
And of course, since we've, you know, demoted Pluto or even made that distinction, we found plenty of other objects that are Pluto's size or bigger. You know, so we know that there is 11, 12, 13, 14, depending on how you want to count it.
Mm.
And that's why scientists went... We don't want to count all those, so let's just demote,
cut Pluto
off. Yeah, and then if we find, for some reason, you know, a very non-reflective, dark gas giant out there, I guess that'll be the next planet, but everything else is a dwarf planet.
I feel bad for
Pluto. Or a planetoid.
Yeah, all right.
But I mean, so anyway, yeah, so like 10th planet, that's like a, you know, thing in science fiction.
Sure.
The 5th book in the Hitchhiker's Guide trilogy? It's part of the joke. people were from Planet 10, or Planet X. The first appearance of the Cybermen in Doctor Who was in a serial called The 10th Planet in 1966.
Oh, interesting.
That was the first appearance of the Second Doctor as well. So yeah, that's a solid like sci-fi alien kind of concept.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know how it's a moon and a planet at the same time, but whatever.
I won't think about it too much, honestly.
Ask Pluto.
Got Pluto.
Speaking of Doctor Who, I also like the idea of there's something that, like, you always wonder when you've got time travel, you can go anywhere, do anything, and some stories allow you to do that. So you...
Right.
We screwed up. Let's do it again.
Sure.
Aren't you going to run into yourself if you do that?
Yeah.
Are you just... Every time you go back, it's like a blank slate?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some things like Doctor Who... we'll save Doctor Who for last. Some things say, like Star Trek. Star Trek, I don't know with the time traveling. You just kind of do whatever. Let's go back in time and then beam ourselves back into our old bodies and, like, everything's the same.
Yeah, right. Nothing changed. I don't feel any different.
Or, like, Back to the Future, you fade out of the
picture,
the photograph or whatever. Yeah. But, like, Doctor Who always shows up somewhere and he has to be... Or she.
Yes.
The Doctor.
Yes.
Who, I don't think they've ever given us pronouns in the Doctor, so I will just say the Doctor.
Fair.
The Doctor gets into a situation and wants to help the people. There's usually some complication where they can't just leave if they're in danger.
Right.
But there was one specific episode. Actually, there's two episodes I want to talk about. This is the Doctor Who podcast now. there was an episode serial called The Pyramids of Mars.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite Fourth Doctor serials. And in it, they get involved with this situation that's going on. It's complicated, as it always is. The show wears more hats than the Doctor sometimes.
Or scarves.
and they're up against, like, this ancient ghost god from Mars called Sutek. And he's causing a lot of trouble. And they're in a lot of danger. And Sarah Jane's like, Doctor, let's just go. We have a time machine. We can go anywhere.
Why are we here?
Let's just leave this situation. And he's like, well, we don't do that. You know, because we have to help people. And she's like, but we could just, you know, we could just leave and then come back. We could go to the future and do something. Or we could go even farther back. And he's like, okay, let's go. And they get in the TARDIS. And they go back to Earth. They go back to London. And it's destroyed. It's gone. In 1979 or whatever it was.
Okay.
And he's like, this is the thing. We're already there. If we had just come here at this time, some other day, that would have been fine. But we're already in those events. So if we leave and never go back, this is our future now.
Mm.
So that's one way to do it. It's like you're sort of involved in things.
Yeah.
And then there's another episode of the first season of the reboot with the Ninth Doctor.
Yes.
Called Father's Day, where the Doctor takes Rose back. It is a he, them, then. To see her father, just to witness his death, because he gets hit by a car.
Yeah.
A little morbid. And I think she wants to just see him, or maybe just say hi to him or something like that.
Yeah.
And the time comes, and she chickens out, because it's the death of her father.
Yeah.
So the Doctor's like, okay, I shouldn't do this, but we can do it again. And so they just go back again, and then just stand kind of farther behind the thems that are already there.
Yep. Yep, because that's a good idea.
Yeah. You think that the Doctor would have, like, me sense or something like that. Am I here again? But this time, she sees, she runs out and, like, pushes her father out of the way of the car. Yeah. And so the thems that were already there immediately disappear. And the Doctor's like, oh, no, this is bad. We just screwed up really bad.
Yeah.
And then the entire episode is them having to escape, like, the horrible paradox that they've caused. And I'm glad that 8 women could go to a construction site and no hooting. Japan is way more polite than America, so.
Yes, certifiably way more polite.
Did you want to talk about the song?
Yes, the song is called Ai no Senshi, or Soldier of Love. And, you know, I remember this. This is the song when I was younger. This is a banger. It's pretty dang good. I actually think that my friend who introduced me to Sailor Moon put this on a mix for me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, because I just, it's burned into my brain. But I really, really, really like this song. Anyways, the lyrics were written by Rui Sarazawa, who wrote the lyrics on the ending theme, Maiden's Policy.
Oh, sure.
And it was composed, and the song was composed and arranged by Nobuhiko Kashihara, who is a composer and composed and arranged several songs for Sailor Moon, none of which we have seen featured in the series just yet.
Okay.
But it was also performed by Yoko Ishida, and she was the same singer who sings Maiden's Policy as well.
Okay.
So, and then you touched upon some of the lyrics.
Yeah.
Which I think that it's pretty dang great. As I thought, it is I who must do this by my own hand. I will crush evil into defeat. That's right. Until then, I must persevere. Awaken now, soldier of blue. But
what?
I don't know.
I think that's poo.
You're right. But by the end of the song, it's not just talking about one soldier. It's talking about everybody. Come on, it is we who must do this. We will show them the pure hearts that girls have. Whatever we do and everything, we must persevere, vowing in our hearts, soldiers of love. So, I don't know. I think it's pretty amazing. And the
as I thought, I must take care of this. That's all well and good. But
yes.
We want to talk about the Deke song.
Yeah, so in the Deke dub... This you're just on your seat with anticipation.
You heard me vibrating?
Yes. Is that Cal? The song that plays while they fight is called She's Got the Power.
She's Got the Touch.
Yes. Which has an exclamation point at the end of it. The song title does, which I also remember because I think I mentioned before I had the Deke dub, like at least out. Album of dubbed songs, the first one that came out.
Yeah.
And just listening to it, I mean, it's sung by a guy, which is an interesting choice for this song.
Yes.
It's about She's Got the Power.
It's sung by Stan Bush, the guy that did You Got the Touch.
The same guy?
From the Transformers movie, yeah.
I didn't know it was the same guy.
You got the love, you got it all. You make your hair look like meatballs. You're a winner. Meow, meow.
Oh my God.
The same guy. This is why they picked him.
Yes. They were like, we need Deke, the Transformer guy.
Deke must have had like a little extra money laying around because, you know, this one was shorter than other ones. Oh, that's right. Oh yeah. We cut the sea dinosaur one. So we've got a little extra cash. We need something to really sell that this is a huge moment. Let's think rockin' song, cartoon, rewind maybe 7 or 8 years.
Right.
The Transformers. What's Stan Bush up to? And Stan Bush, I know you don't know that name. There's no reason you would have. He's just like not even a mid-level. He's like a C-level like rock guy. I don't mean to like impugn his talent.
No,
he's just not somebody who ever really rose to any heights. But he did the You Got the Touch Transformers song, which I think a lot of people know. And this. And on his box set. On his box set, you know, it's his quote unquote greatest hits. But like number one and number two are these two songs.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, much like, you know, You Got the Touch endured because of kids from my generation, basically, liking the Transformers movies. Kids from the next generation
a lot of people
remember this song.
I do like this song. I think if I had to choose, I probably would pick the Japanese version. But I like this song, too. It's a lot of fun. It's ridiculous. I mean, the guitar licks, and then like I think like before it even starts, there's like this guttural and it's just like,
what? Well, it's very similar to You Got the Touch.
It is.
It's almost like he's like, she's got the touch. Yeah, we don't want to talk about touch and 14-year-old girls.
Right.
She's got the power. Perfect.
I know.
So it's like it's not as good as You've Got the Touch.
Correct.
It has a similar energy to it, but it feels incomplete. If they had only given her the touch and the power, sadly, she's only got the power. But yeah, it's good.
I mean, let's see here. A crash of thunder, a brilliant flash of light. The battle has begun and only one will win the fight. Danger in the air, destroying everything in sight. The time has come to right the wrong. with prison power might. She's got the power. Okay, I won't.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I'll say, but I mean, I do remember it.
I looked and I couldn't tell. I didn't find a music video, but I wish they'd done a music video for it the way they did for You Got the Touch, because the You Got the Touch video is clips from the movie and then, like, even then, like, 48-year-old Stan Bush just, like, superimposed over it going, like, yeah. And then it's like, and then he's, like, using his guitar and he's, like, blocking lasers and wow.
That
so
sounds amazing.
So if they had just done that with, like, you know, Usagi and, like, Ami walking around and, like, this, like, old guy following him around. In fact, I think I'm going to make that now.
That sounds amazing. And you could have, like, with his guitar, he could be blocking the Ayakashi sisters' powers. Yeah, I think that sounds pretty much about just about one of the most amazing things I've heard.
Do you have a favorite matchup?
Good question.
See, they haven't got to the point yet where we're doing the X-Men thing where we trade opponents, you know. So why isn't the fire lady, you know, melting the ice lady's, you know, ice powers?
Sure.
Right now we're just matching up 1-to-1.
Right. Well, I guess I have a least favorite one, because I think you mentioned that, and you called this, and it so is, they recycled the same animation for...
There are a couple. Like I said, they used the whole budget.
for Jupiter and Pets.
Yeah.
Like, it was exactly the same from when they were at the charm store.
Yeah. A bit abortive.
Yeah.
But with the promise of action to come.
I think I liked Venus and Calaveras, just because, I don't know, seeing that Love Me Chain and the whip.
The whip showdown.
Yeah. I think that was pretty good. How about you?
Yeah, it's probably my favorite, too.
It's pretty good.
Let's just flip a coin, and every other week, just one of us will host, and the other person can just take a break. We have all the same opinions anyway.
Whoa. We'll just, one will host, and see if you can tell whose voice it is speaking to you. You're saying we're the same.
Welcome to an episode of Sailor Moon. Prism Crystal Power Makeup, the episode. I'm Nick Anhana.
So Caliban, you finally show your face. Just in time for me to blow it off.
It's fitting you chose to hide in this abandoned movie theater, Mika and Hana, because for you, the show's over.
Big talk, but soon you'll be as dead as all the well-loved celebrities we lost this year.
When I'm done, they'll be cleaning you off the walls like COVID-19!
Wait, where's your face mask?
I thought we were gonna fight outside.
Oh, come on!
I mean, if the murder hornets aren't out there still.
Take this.
You want to watch HBO Max on my phone?
I'll start cooking some beans in this old boot. Just Enough Trope. News, reviews, and apocalyptic views every Monday on the Just Enough Trope Network.
Won't the 5G kill us?
For Kyoro Kyoro Miru, or Curiously Looking Around, where we talk about elements of Japanese culture within the episode, today we're going to talk about mental health in Japan.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I guess I do want to just put a little bit of a trigger warning out there for everybody as we...
Bedwetters, buckle up.
Well, I'm just saying we will be talking about mental illness.
Sure.
And as well as suicide. And
oh, jeez.
So I just want people to be aware of that. Mm. So continuing on, Chibiusa is homesick and lonely. As we see in this episode, she has traveled through time and misses her parents. She feels helpless in her task to find the silver crystal and to help her mother, and as though no one can help her. She doesn't feel as if she can talk to anyone about this. But it is better to talk to someone about your anxieties than to let them build up without being managed. Sometimes that person is a trained mental health professional. That is why today we are going to talk about mental health in Japan.
Sometimes it's poo.
Sometimes it's poo. I didn't.
Poo is not. I understand that there is a gulf of time and lots of complications and things going on in Pooh's world. But yeah, Pooh is not giving the focus to Chibi that Chibi needs.
I would.
I could see how Chibi would feel like she's all alone when she turns to Pooh and Pooh lets her down.
See, you made fun of me for starting that.
Okay, all right, but the thing is that that happened episodes ago. I thought we were going to be cool about Pooh. I thought we were going to let Pooh.
We were never cool about Pooh.
We were just
going to
let Pooh slide.
We were never going to do that.
But then you bring Pooh back all of a sudden. This Pooh is cold.
This pee.
All right, enough fun.
Okay. Yeah, no, okay.
But it's Luna pee, and then she gets poo out of it. Come on.
I know.
All right, enough fun.
Okay.
Sad, serious stuff.
So the word frequently utilized to mean mental illness in Japanese is kokoro no byoki. Kokoro is a Japanese word. We don't really have a direct translation. It means mind, heart, or spirit. It's kind of maybe more likened to spirit. Byoki means disease, illness, or sickness. Perhaps it is best translated as sickness of the spirit, but you know, mental illness.
Sure.
In Japan, individuals with mental illness have traditionally been thought of as abnormal, weak, or not trying hard enough, or even vicious.
Hmm.
In Japan, families who have members with mental illness are looked down on as if their bloodline is contaminated, and this can affect their social standing as a family as well. This outlook has been prevalent for hundreds of years, partially because of a lack of understanding about what mental illness really is.
So we're starting off on bad foot here.
Yes, correct. So in 1900, the first law, I thought maybe it would be to get a kind of better general understanding, we would kind of take a look at some historical laws dealing with mental illness.
Yeah.
In 1900, the first
and
law.
And just to, sorry to cut you off, but just to set the scene, you know, it's not like. The Western world or like America's
laws and I was like
about mental illness have been great even up to the midpoint of the 20th century.
I wasn't sure if I should like
so it's not,
do I need to
we're
like
not just
say
gonna
that or...
well we just did so yeah. We're not gonna pile on and it's like oh my god Japan's the worst like
no
this is a growing field still.
It is a growing field still there you know it. A lot of countries the world over, there's still a lot of stigma all over the world with mental illness. And by and large, that has largely gotten better. Not to be disparaging against Japan, but largely due to some cultural stigma, they are lagging behind in many ways other first world countries as far as mental health.
Mm.
So in the way that it's viewed and laws and that sort of thing. And the first law pertaining to mentally ill came about in 1900 in Japan. It was called the Law of... I've heard it called a couple of different things, but in one place they called it the Law of Confinement and Protection of the Mentally Ill Act. This formalized and legalized the home confinement of mentally ill individuals, a practice which had been conducted since the Edo period, 1603 to 1868. Families now had to send petitions into their local government requesting to confine a relative. No regulations or services were provided as to how home confinement should be carried out. Unfortunately, many mentally ill people were confined to small, filthy, and inhumane conditions.
Hmm. Protection.
Protection for
the
who?
Protection Act. Yes.
We're protecting the families is what we're protecting.
Well, I just feel like most... it's good to know that East, West... the process or the practice of naming something the opposite of what it is in government is a global phenomenon.
That's true.
The Ministry of Defense.
Yeah.
Is going to make war on everybody.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. No, that's what's going on here. In 1950, the Mental Hygiene Act was passed and home confinement became illegal. The main caregivers of the mentally ill were no longer their families, but psychiatrists and the rest of the caregivers at mental institutions. Bringing mentally ill relatives to the hospital for inpatient care became the popular solution. Unfortunately, patient rights and care were still not thought of as the most important function of these institutions. The Japanese government at this time also implemented measures that made sure that private mental institutions turned a profit.
Okay, sure, right. That's, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. For-profit healthcare. That
always goes well.
Yeah, always.
Yeah. Why would that be a bad idea? For example, they put into place a measure that allowed mental hospitals to have a lower medical staff to patient ratio than other hospitals. Also, with the for-profit idea built in, many mental hospitals vastly increased the number of patient beds.
Yeah. You won't believe how many people we can protect in this place, baby.
Yeah, yeah. And this is just, I just don't even know. This is hard to fathom. The number of patient beds more than doubled from 64,725 in 1957 to 153,639 in 1964. So that's less than 10 years.
So they got wind of, and the same thing was happening in America too.
Like, yeah.
Psychiatric care was being revolutionized around this time as well. But mm-hmm. Yeah, they got wind of they're part of the international community now. And they're like, we can make money doing this.
Yeah.
Why are we letting these people be protected at home?
Right.
This baby can fit so many protectees in it.
Yeah, it's really upsetting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it, but yeah, I mean, with in the guise of we're helping people, we're providing better care for them, and you know, yeah.
What's that care look like?
Yeah, exactly. It should be mentioned that although the Mental Hygiene Act was passed supposedly to help mental health patients, it was probably more likely passed so families and society would have a place to put mental health patients. Mm. The act also allowed for involuntary confinement and, quote, social hospitalization, which is the exceedingly long-term hospitalization of mental health patients whose conditions are stable.
Mm.
So basically who no longer need to be hospitalized.
Mm.
In September of 2020, this is maybe an extreme case, but Tokyo Ito 69 filed a lawsuit against the central government of Japan requesting 33 million yen, which is $318,000 U.S. dollars in damages for being denied discharge over the years.
Tokyo Ito 69? Is that a Twitch streamer?
No.
his co-defendant, Fukushima 420, was...
So his name is Tokyo Ito, and he's 69. That's his age.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
That's... Okay, you have to... Tokyo Ito, 69. That's how you say that.
Fair enough.
And I say nice. Continue. Gotta keep the jokes going.
All right.
Keep the jokes going.
Yes. Ito was diagnosed with schizophrenia when he was 16 and placed into a Tokyo hospital in 1968. He was finally released in October of 2012 after spending over four decades in various mental health hospitals.
Wow.
And he, according to him, you know, stabilized somewhere in the, you know, early mid 70s, you know, if not sooner.
Yeah.
And they even, I don't understand how this works, but he was trying to be like the model patient so he would get discharged, but they just weren't discharging him. And there was like the frustrating thing, I don't know like what it was like exactly, but there was no discussion about like, what is the plan for discharge? What are we going to, they just, and this sort of thing happens a lot, or was happening a lot. And, you know, he just was released in 2012. And you know a large reason why he was released? The hospital he was in was in Fukushima, and the tsunami in 2011 displaced him. He got moved to a different facility. They observed him there for a while, and the doctor there was like, "You seem pretty stable after he was there for a while. Would you like to be released?" And he was kind of like, what?
Okay, write that down.
Yeah.
I'm going to, that's a script. That's a screenplay.
Yeah, I know, right?
Right?
Yeah.
It's like Cuckoo's Nest meets Girl Interrupted meets The Terminal. Right?
Okay.
Where Tom Hanks is stuck in an airport for yes. 20 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And then with a little disaster movie in there too, you know, with the Fukushima thing, a little Chernobyl.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be cynical, but well, how has that guy's story not been told?
I don't know. Maybe nobody has been like, hey, you should, but he, so, you know, he just filed the suit at the end of last year. So,
right.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe if he's been 69. Approached. All right.
I got a title too.
I know. My goodness.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. So yeah, in, going back in 1987, the mental health law revised, and for the first time, a law talked about the patient's rights and encourage the rehabilitation of people who have mental illness back into society and living more independently. Before this was passed in 1987, these really long stays were common, and even like it was not uncommon for somebody to be checked into the hospital for even like almost like a year, which is can be really lengthy for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they were released before this law was passed, there was nothing put into place of like, here is the roadmap for like you, you know, basically going back into the outside
so
world.
It sounds like the key isn't
and
thrown away, but the key is definitely misplaced in one of these drawers here. Like they, there's just no, they put these people away and there's no program for them or no even like roadmap for them to be released eventually.
And to be back
integrated
as
back
into
society.
Yes, exactly. And the frustrating thing too, like with Ito's story, I'm like wondering like, I mean, I'm assuming he was advocating for himself, but like, you know, like were loved ones, you know, like was
right.
there, you know, or was family wanting him to stay in or, you know.
Or did they even know how to get him out?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just, it's very frustrating. And in 1993, the Basic Law for Persons with Disabilities was put into place, and people with mental illnesses were recognized by law as individuals with disabilities. And the government was therefore obligated to construct a welfare program for those with mental illness.
Okay.
So basically, there, you know, are like, what is the, like, there are like homes that were like being set up that like, well, this isn't an institution, but like.
It's a halfway house.
Yeah, exactly. So like, think programs like that. Fast forwarding to the early 2000s, a 2008 study by the Ministry of Health, Welfare, and Labor found that 24% of Japanese people had experienced some kind of mental health issue.
Hmm.
Another report found that 1 in 5 adults in Japan had thought about killing themselves, with actual suicide rates at 51 per 100,000 people, which is twice as high as the U.S. and 3 times that of the U.K.
Hmm.
The figures gave rise to a $222 million government campaign in 2006 to raise awareness about suicide prevention and to making counseling services more readily available. That being said, mental health care in Japan is widely regarded as trailing behind that of many other developed countries. In 2014... Japan still had a very high ratio of psychiatric care beds per capita among other countries in the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, with 269 beds per 100,000 people, compared with the average of 68. And that's based on a 2014 OECD report. About 200 beds more than the average. It's a large ratio. So they're trying to make it so mental health care is more community based than hospitalization based.
Yeah.
A sense of shame still frequently hinders those who suffer less severely from mental illness from seeking help. Yuzo Kato, director of the Tokyo Suicide Prevention Center, is critical of the government campaign to lower the suicide rate, which centers mostly on making counseling available. Quote, more should be done to end the cultural stigma attached to mental illness. Just in case this distinction is not common knowledge, a psychiatrist can diagnose a patient and prescribe medications, but they do not provide counseling or talk therapy. In Japan, insurance covers psychiatric treatment, but not talk therapy. Psychiatrists are in such high demand that appointments are frequently as short as 10 minutes. And this has also led to patients being vastly over-medicated, which is not helping either.
So how was your week? Well, it was, we need to stop. Here, take this horse pill.
I know. And if you seek the help of a therapist, you will typically spend anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 yen or more for 50 minutes. And that's around 50 to 100 US dollars for one session.
Wow.
Some of my sources said if you want an English-speaking therapist, and they do exist in Japan, you will tend to pay towards the higher end of that. Until the late 1990s in Japan, depression was a term seldom spoken outside of psychiatric circles. Some swore that this was because people in Japan just did not suffer from it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, right.
It's all that fish.
Yeah, right? A more likely cause is due to Japan's medical tradition in which depression has been considered a predominantly physical rather than both physical and psychological, which is more common in the West, which I find very interesting.
It is a fish. Yeah. Like, you're not eating enough fish.
While the diagnosis was rarely given, individuals experiencing typical symptoms were likely to be diagnosed by their doctors as needing rest.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's not wrong.
Yes.
It doesn't go very far.
No, right. Exactly. It's just a start, maybe. This made Japan such a substandard market for antidepressants that the makers of Prozac almost abandoned it.
Huh.
That all changed.
Well, wait, I thought that they were giving out a lot of drugs.
They are now.
Oh, okay.
That all changed at the end of the 20th century, thanks largely to a memorable marketing campaign commissioned by a Japanese drug firm. The campaign essentially rebranded depression, or utsubyo, as kokoro no kaze, a cold of the spirit.
And the ad featured a Japanese person being followed around by a cloud.
Probably.
But it was a lot cuter than the clouds in American commercials.
Probably. This could happen to anyone. And drugs could treat it. Thanks, Prozac!
Well, I don't totally hate it. I mean, commercials are, look, you know, unmedicated depression is bad news. And you know, you got to sell medication to people. You're going to do that through a commercial. So, you know, I don't hate it, but you're going to tell me more and then I'm probably going to hate it.
Well, the number of people diagnosed with a mood disorder in Japan doubled in just 4 years as the market for antidepressants rapidly grew. In 2006, the market was valued at six times that it had been just 8 years prior, which is massive.
And there was a movie where a Japanese guy played the Jake Gyllenhaal character and
Japanese
Anne Hathaway.
I actually wouldn't be surprised.
Who's the Japanese Oliver Platt? That's what I need to know.
I don't. Continue. I don't know. It became somewhat common for celebrities to confess that they had experienced depression. Kokoro no Kaze was not just tolerable. It was even somewhat stylish.
Jeez.
I mean,
I do hate it. I was right.
I guess let me elaborate on that a little bit. I think that you can get some good mental health help in Japan if you won't get covered by insurance, but I've seen some YouTubers talk about their experience in Japan, and some of them seem like they're getting really great help, which I think is a good thing. But some of the things that they are talking about, some people have talked about, I swear, like, people have, I guess, criticized them for, like, talking about it, like, that they're, and I don't know if this is a cultural thing to Japan. I've never, but people were criticizing them as being attention seeking, and also just saying that they had a mental illness because they wanted to be cool or fashionable, which is just, it's really hard for me to wrap my head around.
That's how we got here in the first place.
I know. Right? I know. So but I mean, something else that was positive that came out about this is there were some court cases that were brought about because of cases of depression. The family of Ichiro Oshima took his employer, Dentsu, which is Japan's largest advertising agency, to court after he killed himself following months of heavy, heavy overtime. And there were, this brought a lot of attention to the fact that, depression could be caused by one's circumstances as well as, it's not, as including overwork. And I think that was, maybe people didn't really have that connection before that case.
That'd be a good connection to make.
Yeah, especially in Japan.
Japan's culture.
Yes, exactly. And since 2015, Japan has brought in workplace stress checks. It's a questionnaire that covers causes and symptoms of stress, and it's assessed by doctors and nurses and lead to medical care who need it. And this is mandatory for companies that have more than 50 staff members.
Okay.
And smaller businesses are encouraged to do it, but it's not required. So, I mean, there's that. But so it's maybe it's baby steps. But I think... this is a really difficult topic to find a lot of information on, because I think that there is still a lot of stigma against mental illness in Japan. And the thing that I could find the most information on was actually depression and suicide. So I don't know. And it's a little, I guess it's a little disheartening that even with the push to lower the suicide rate, that insurance doesn't cover talk therapy, which could, probably really help you talk to somebody about what you're going through.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big part of therapy.
It is a huge part of therapy.
Yeah, I get the feeling that the Japanese aren't not a high percentage of oversharers.
No. And there is, I think maybe we've touched upon this at other times as well, but there is, because of the, there's a cultural thing of like needing to be polite and also not wanting to talk about your negative feelings and or overshare. So, Yeah, I think it's extremely difficult.
There's so many different. We need like a, you know, well, this is a little aggressive, but like a Japanese Sigmund Freud. You know, sometimes an eel is just an eel, and or something. Because like, there's just so many different approaches to mental health care and to psychiatry that you'd think that there's got to be something that would work with their cultural reticence.
Yeah, right. Like there needs to be a psychiatrist.
Fill out this form, you know. You don't have to say it out loud, or I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or just you know, maybe you know, digital care or something like that. If you're not comfortable laying on a couch and saying something, you know, I am me or something like that.
Well, even I mean, that's better than nothing. And there are you know, suicide hotlines and that sort of thing too. But yeah, just, I mean, that's an extreme.
Anti-suicide vending machines. Okay. And they're very ingenuous over there.
Yeah. But that is a good point. Like you would think maybe there would be, a psychologist who just kind of was like, well, how can we get people to change the way that they look at mental health and, how they approach it. I was at a talk, a webinar or something like that recently, and somebody explained something and I was like, that just makes sense to me. And it's like, why don't we do that? But typically we kind of tend to think of like, you know, our physical health, like maybe we do, maybe we don't, on like maybe a spectrum, like this is how I feel today, or, you know, but we don't really think about our mental health as like on a spectrum. It's like, it's only a problem if there's a problem, you know, we don't rate where am I at today? Oh, I'm just having a bad day. Or is this a, you know, everything is going wrong day. I got fired. I broke up with my significant other, you know, everything is going wrong. Or is it just like, I cannot get out of bed today. You know, where does it fall? And it's like, why don't we think of our mental health as a spectrum? And it's like, we don't think about it until like we're not, there's an issue. Like,
right.
So,
yeah. Like, oh, there's a fire. Let's put the fire out.
Right.
But not, why don't we move all these, oily rags away from these cans of gasoline?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think the world over, we need a better view of mental health and a better approach to it.
Yeah. So. Agreed.
Itadakimasu with Usagi. What did Usagi eat in this episode? Nothing. There's no food in this episode.
No time to eat.
I ain't got time to eat.
I got rabbits to protect.
Yes. And not eat. Villain Gage, where you rate a baddie 1 to 5 dark stars, 5 being the most wicked. No droid in this episode, and there are no real non-spoiler things that I can share about the Ayakashi sisters or Rubius.
Yeah. I'm glad we talked a lot before. All right. So, look, you're overconfident. You're a villain. You're from the 10th planet.
Right.
The Dark Moon.
Yeah.
You know, you've got this thing handled. Mm-hmm. But, like, why not be sure and show up with all of your droids or something? You got a Freezy droid. You got a Stretchy droid.
Sure.
You got a sentient wine droid.
Yeah.
Like, you know, why not bring everybody in?
Yeah.
But they're just going to handle this themselves.
Yep.
So I'm guessing, you know, without spoiling anything, that we'll have an opportunity to talk about the Ayakashi sisters either collectively or individually from a rating perspective in the future.
Do we want to rate them before...
Big blank in this...
Before they're gone?
In this part of the book, I guess.
Right. I mean, not to put you on the spot, and I don't even really know what I would answer. Do you have a favorite of the Ayakashi?
Calaveras.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like her entire, you know, her whole Turnt Sienna like aesthetic, but she's sassy. She's got a good look. She's got a, you know, she's got the whip. She's my favorite.
Yeah, she's pretty great. I can't decide if I like Koan or Berthier more. Like, I think what I like about Berthier is that she's so mean, but she'll, like, say it to you with, like, a smile or in this cutesy, sweet little voice.
Yeah.
So I really like that. So, you know, maybe if you had to twist my arm, maybe I would say her. So,
yeah. And she could break the fourth wall.
Yeah, right?
We'll be right back. Yeah.
That's always good. For Subbu or Dubbu, where we talk about the most interesting differences between the sub and the dub. In the dub, the scene where Usagi discovers that Chibiusa wet her bed was cut. You see her in the bed, but you don't see that she's wet.
It's just, the effrontery. Get out of my bed.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Okay. I don't know if it is because there's a lot of kids watching this and we don't want them to be embarrassed. Is it because it's a
Yeah, Japan will go there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I respect them for that. But, you know, I could see cutting this part.
Or is it because it's a bodily function?
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
That too.
Yeah.
Although any cartoon today, I think, is, you know, the fart jokes come.
Oh, yeah.
Thick and fast.
Oh.
And potent. Gross. Oh, yeah. Ms. Pooh is going to turn her nose up at a fart joke.
That's right.
Still, though, I mean, that's, you know, it's... I mean, it's what we're talking about. It's how we got into talking about depression and mental health and stuff like that. Look, we started a conversation, or the show did, based off of what they presented. And Deke wants nothing to do with that.
No. I was also, I'm trying to think, because is Usagi beating the sheets, or is she beating her futon mattress?
Either one.
Yeah.
Could be either one.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell the thickness.
I know.
I don't know if is that an effective cleaning technique?
I mean, you're drying it,
I guess. Is that, that's not why you beat a rug. You beat a rug to get, like, bits of stuff out of it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe, well, actually, you know, she's not a cleaning professional.
Well, that's true,
she is just a kid who's like, well, I can't have mom do this. And dad doesn't exist anymore.
All right.
Never gonna let it go.
Oh my god. And this episode actually did not air in Sweden because the studio in charge of that dub didn't want to air singing in a foreign language.
Yeah, I read that.
What the heck?
Well, just
why
put general music under it? You know, just put a music bed under it.
Sure.
Or have you know, the girls from Aquaman, Justice League, just belt out something. You know, like, what? Just replace it.
I know. They were the only one. They're like, song in a foreign language.
Stan Bush, he takes orders. You know, his special orders are fine with him. He's waiting by the phone.
She's got the power.
Schmirkin' gherkin. Like, he'll, you know, just write it out phonetically. He'll do it.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll dodge all kinds of lasers.
And now we are up to rating our episode. I absolutely love the epic battle, including the flawless introductions and the amazing song. I love how Usagi realizes that even though Chibiusa annoys the crap out of her, she would do anything to protect her. And how Chibiusa grabs onto her. Oh my god! It's really just, it touches you in the feels. I think this is an excellent episode. I'm gonna give it 5 out of 5 roses.
So she's got the touch.
Yes.
Whenever they touch, they're like Vulcans. They have touch telepathy. So, like, she grabs her and then just, whoa, I'm seeing a vision.
I'm seeing a vision. She's what is
swinging.
This? Yeah.
She's pretending to be a fart bubble in the bath.
I know.
That seems to be how it works. You know, I almost wish I've got 5 extra stars this week because no villain rating. They're not stars, of course. I'm going to give it 5, but boy, I just got 5 other units of rating there. I'd love to continue to pile on this excellent episode.
Yes.
And I don't mean to, you know, a show just kind of you know, marks time, just goes through the motions week after week, and then they do a big event one, and suddenly that gets a good rating. But what can I say? Like, it's just, it's dramatic, it's funny, it's engrossing.
Yeah.
You know, it's touching. It's got everything that you come to the show for. And this is, yeah, this is a spike in the graph. This is definitely a five for me. Yeah,
me too. My English title is Chibiusa's Distress, Cry for Help.
Cry heard around the world.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's weird because they
never
have, like,
leave Chibiusa alone. Yeah. Don't do it.
She's got this thing where she cries and then you can see where she is because she's giving off energy or something. But then creepy wise guy's like, oh, she's going to be over there. So it doesn't really matter anyway. Yeah. It sort of doubles up in the plot.
Speaking
4.5.
Yeah.
No, we don't do halves. 5.
Speaking of Wiseman, it really struck me watching this this time how he looks into a crystal ball that's on a staff and he moves his hands around it.
I already said that.
Did you already say that?
I've said that before.
Oh, okay.
He's like Beryl.
Yeah, he's like Beryl.
Back to the well.
All right.
There's just a well. Remember the old family restaurants and they'd have the well and you could reach in and get a pencil eraser? I'm so old. You have no idea what I'm talking about.
I have
about.
No idea.
Anyway, they used to have that at Shoney's or whatever. They have a well and you reach in and you just pull out like a robed villain with long fingernails and they've got a crystal ball and they're like, ready to go, boss. When do you need me? Is it One Piece this week? What are we doing? So maybe that's what they did. I don't know.
Yes.
Evil people are all going to... There's an evil style. There's an evil couture.
Yeah.
Rubaeus is bucking that trend, though. He comes in his parachute pants, you know, and his combat boots, and he's like, whatever.
Whatever, man.
He's going to shoot some flashy balls. Do my job. Go home. This is not who I am. My Deke title is Eve of Construction.
Okay.
It's going to take an hour to explain.
Destruction?
There's a song, the protest song from the, I think it's from the 70s, actually, by a guy named Barry Maguire. Speaking of Stan Bush, there's another guy nobody's ever heard of.
Oh, my goodness.
But it's, yeah, you know, it's about the war and stuff like that.
Okay. All right.
You don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Gotcha. Okay, this is, yeah, I mean, that...
Because I ran out of things to say about construction sites. Because they used to fight on them a lot. This is a return to form.
Literally.
For the fighting on an already destroyed or not yet constructed building, so...
Complete with tuxedo masks coming in on a crane.
Yeah, right.
Which is... Just,
well, just I want the outtakes where they're all like whipping and water snakes and stuff like that. And he's just like shimmying up a crane. He's like, don't look up here. Don't look up here. All right, good. I got it.
Don't look at me.
Okay. All right.
I know.
Or he's like using his roses like crampons. He's like just sticking him in there, climbing up.
I like that image. Next episode, we are talking about episode number 69.
Nice.
Mezame yo nemureru bishoujo, Mamoru no kuno in Japanese, Awaken the Sleeping Beauty, Mamoru's Distress, the English translation, and the English title, Prediction of Doom.
Well, I know that the titles don't mean anything, but that does sound ominous. Did you say mezame?
Yes.
That means my friends, right? In French.
Yeah, mezame.
Mezame.
Yeah.
I should mention that we are at number 11 today on the Canada Apple Podcast charts for animation and
Woo-hoo!
Manga. We've been higher, but that's a good spot for us. And we are charting in the upper 200s on the United States of America Animation and Manga Podcast chart.
Yay!
And we get there because of listeners like you. And also your ratings and your reviews, you know, subscribe to the show, obviously. And if you're not on a platform, you know, I get that not everybody's on Apple Podcasts, although we're doing very well on Apple Podcasts. But, you know, whatever platform you're on, if there's some way to just, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down, 5 stars, 5 roses, you know, whatever the rating is. If you could take one moment the next time that you're on your listening platform of choice and just give us that thumbs up, mm-hmm. give us that little shot there. That will definitely help us move up in those ranks. But doing pretty good. Happy where we are. And appreciate the listeners helping us out.
Yes, thank you, listeners. We really appreciate it. I did want to mention, too, that we will be taking a week off next week, but we will be back the following Friday. So stay tuned.
Yeah, it's a good time to step back a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Have a mental health break ourselves. So.
Well, just like, you know, it's just that that's an end of a chapter.
It is.
Or at least a half. We got to be about halfway through, don't we?
I think so. Yeah. I think we're actually over halfway through.
Oh boy.
Okay. I know. Yeah.
Well, then we'll just take a little powder.
Go after the
rabbit.
Next
week, and be back the week after next for a prediction of doom.
Well, that's our show for this week, and the Name of the Moon will be punishing you next time with another episode of Sailor Noon. She got the touch.